everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we are talking about the conclusion to the trilogy until a couple years ago when they made a fourth one, Scream 3. As, you know, sometimes we have guests, we are honored to have the director of You Might Be the Killer, Brett Simmons, on the show because he made a far better meta horror film than Scream 3.
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, thank you. I debated just being totally silent so that just sounded like no one was actually here and that you guys were like liars, but I couldn't do that to you. I couldn't do it.
I mean, there is one thing that Scream 3 has that unfortunately You Might Be the Killer doesn't have, and that's Creed in the soundtrack. So,
oh no,
this movie kicks off with some "What If?"
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Makes me wonder, what if I put on any other movie?
Get out.
It's funny, like, we actually called Creed about writing, like, a You Might Be the Killer song, but they were just, they're too busy. Just too, way too busy.
You might be a liar.
Yeah. They were like, here's the number for Alter Bridge. Give them a shot.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, you couldn't get Creed or Alter Bridge, so you, like, got Godsmack.
Yeah, no. Smash Mouth, actually, was, like, it was, like, really, like, close.
So right out the gate, this movie kicks off. We got Cotton Weary. He's in his car. He's driving. He's talking on a car
with a car phone. Yeah, which, like, I have a note that's like, because full disclosure, it had been a long time since I had watched this movie because it's garbage. But I'm like, they have, it's like 2000 when this movie came out, right?
Yeah, he has a cell phone.
He has a cell phone, but
was it 2000? Wow.
Yeah. But I was like, so confused because I'm thinking in 2000, even me in rural Ohio, I had a fucking cell phone. This LA douchebag didn't.
It's safer, Scott. You guys can't mock him for being safe.
No, but we can mock him for being like the quintessential stereotypical celebrity that we hate, which kills me because like Scream opens like the most relatable like character. You're just like, wow, yeah, this is cool. I get this. Wow. And then this one, you're just like, I have no idea the life that this guy leads. I have no idea who this jerk is. I just hate him. And he's like on the phone with like his agent.
This movie tried to warn us. And all we did was just mock it and we shat on it. I mean, the writer of this movie, the whole basis of this movie is about Hollywood perverts and them taking advantage of young girls for gain. And it is produced by the Weinstein brothers. This guy put his neck on the line to be like, yo, my boss is fucking disgusting. And we're like, oh, this is the worst of the trilogy. Nah. I mean, he could have done a better job.
It makes it more uncomfortable, actually, that it's produced by the Weinsteins and that's the plot premise. I remember there was a time in my life where I was like, oh, Scream 3 isn't good, but it is so much better than Scream 2. And man, my opinions have changed over the years greatly. Yeah.
I totally agree with that. I used to like hate Scream 2 and thought Scream 3 was way better. And now I completely agree. Revisiting them, I'm like, wow, Scream 2 is actually so much better and 3 is total garbage.
it's the worst of them. It's still a fun movie. Hot take. We're gonna settle it here, just so everyone knows. This is not a draft or a debate. It's just a fact. It goes Scream, Scream 4, Scream 2, Scream 3. If you don't think Scream 4 is great, I will fight all of you. And then Scream 3, it's got a lot of holes. I'll say that.
Well, like on top of that, it's also like. It's taking meta to the point where it's just making fun of itself, where it's like, look at all the great cameos we got. We got Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, why is Jay and Silent Bob in this movie? Like, why is that a thing?
No sense. And then Jenny McCarthy, like, is playing a character, but the whole time they're like, but isn't it cool as Jenny McCarthy? I feel like she's practically, like, winking at the camera, like, every take. Just like, oh, I'm so scared. Hey, everybody.
It's so meta. It's the most meta of the movies. But I like it how it's very self-aware and fucking even Jenny McCarthy's character is making a joke about her character being so lame that she's in the third. She's just appearing now in the third of the Stab movies.
See, but I think like the best meta joke in the whole movie, and I mean, just super underutilized is Parker Posey, but
I love Parker Posey.
Jumping all the way to the end where she's about to be killed and she's like, "You can't kill me. I'm the killer in Stab 3." Like that's the best meta joke in the whole movie, probably. And a lot of the other ones just fall flat. Like the Carrie Fisher scene is really uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. I hated it so bad.
It's so painful.
This movie should have been 90 minutes long.
Probably.
And this is a long watch.
It what's the runtime on it again?
It's
like
an hour and 55.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's almost 2 hours. My biggest quarrels with this movie are the mom flashbacks, which we could have axed.
Yeah.
And the lack of, you know, there's a lot of scenes where they are talking in the ghost voice and he is clearly not holding up the device to change his voice.
That's the thing. I don't like the ghost face voice in this movie. I hate that he has some stupid "I can sound exactly like anybody" voice device.
Yeah, that's pretty magical.
like where is that? Like, remember when they did Home Alone 2 and then the talk boy became a real thing? How come Scream 3 didn't launch that as a real thing? Because
right. It's not possible.
Yeah, because it's impossible. That's why. I mean, do you realize what kind of trouble we'd be in the world if anyone could buy a voice changer that just let them sound like whoever they wanted? Like, we could be calling like other countries as Donald Trump.
I mean, I don't think that they'd take us any less seriously than they take him.
This movie just has, they keep updating so much shit. Like, even Nick Cave's Red Right Hand is like a completely new version that's not as good as the original version of Red Right Hand. Like,
yeah.
I don't get how they fucked up so much stuff. And it's just hitting you in the face with it.
I was reading something interesting, like revisiting it and then just knowing we were all going to be talking about it. I was really shocked this time at how much, because I also haven't watched it forever, and I didn't realize how little Sydney's in it. Like, there are so many scenes without Sydney. Like, I love Patrick Warburton to death, but he's just a bodyguard who gets his whole like death scene. And I was like, what's going on? And I was reading this thing they were saying in the trivia notes on IMDb that, like, I guess in Neve Campbell's contract, she only agreed to do it by like contractually having like a minimal number of days, or like they're like, you have to shoot me out in 20 days, but they didn't want the schedule to be like that short, so they just truncated her role and just started like putting a bunch of stuff on other characters, which I'm like, well, I mean, if the lead of your movie says I only want to be in this for 20 days, like maybe the goal is really to just not make the movie.
Or don't make a 2-hour slasher.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's just like it goes on for so long.
When they put so much on the shoulders of Courtney Cox and David Arquette to carry this movie.
Right.
And like, I love both of those characters, but they are side characters and you can't build a whole film around them.
Well, like, you know what? I think it was a product of the time too. Because did you guys know this was the first movie they did as a married couple?
Yes. No, but I did know that.
Yeah. And
but
so,
they
like,
don't have any chemistry.
No, they have zero. And there was this meme that went on. I mean, Courtney Cox, Arquette, if you're listening, I don't mean to offend you. But there was this meme that came out that was of like Courtney Cox's hair in all four of the movies. Dude, and just like, did you see that?
I sent it to them.
Yeah.
It was so, dude, I was dying. I showed it to my wife. I was like, hey, remember how much you love Friends?
Like, yeah, the one that I sent them is of her awful bangs, and it says, if you ever feel like shit, just remember Courtney Cox's hair in Scream 3.
Yeah, that's hilarious. It's really true. Like, she struck out in every single one of these movies with her hair. But I do think, like, what's weird about Scream 3 is I remember when Scream 1 came out, I, like, have such a vivid memory of the experience, like, watching that movie in the theater. 2, I don't. But then 3 goes up there with Lethal Weapon 4 for me, where I was in the theater packed full of fans watching this movie and everyone was like screaming and I did not like the movie, but I was sitting there going like, hey, you know what? I think this movie's actually probably pretty good. Wow, everyone loves this. And I got so swept up by this movie that I left going, I may have just seen the greatest film of all time. And then I rewatched it. I was like, I could not be more wrong.
In your defense, Randy does basically tell us that Scream is among the greats as Godfather and Return of the Jedi when he's talking about great trilogies.
And they had to fucking shoehorn in his character because he's the fan favorite. That's the thing that I remember the most, because I'm pretty sure I saw this in theaters as well, but it wasn't like a packed house or anything like that. But that just has always bugged the shit out of me. Like, they don't need to bring back a dead character.
Yeah, it's so forced. It's so silly. No, not so at all. It's like, almost... I recorded this video just in case. It's like, wow, really? Like, now you're just on a level of insane.
I almost saw this movie in theaters. I was a youngin' in 2000. I was 15 at the time. So we had our friend's parent buy us 3 tickets, me and my friends. And it was the only time I've ever seen this, but they had the ticket taker was directly in front of the door. So you had to walk up to that theater door and he would tear the ticket and let you in.
Oh,
and I was like a tall kid with like facial hair at 15. So he tore my ticket and I walked in, and then I'm standing in the back of the theater waiting for my other 2 friends.
Oh, and eventually you get to come in.
Yeah, eventually one comes in. He's like, hey, I need you real quick. And I'm like, okay. And I walk out and the ticket taker just goes, oh, he is not your dad. I got kicked out of the theater too. Like, I was like, this is fucking bullshit.
Because you are the shitbag that would watch the movie.
No, I absolutely would have. That sucks me, guys.
Go to the mall. I'll catch up with you guys in an hour and 57 minutes.
That is so funny. Oh, my gosh.
There is one joke that still lands for me in this movie, though. And it's when they're on the police station and Courtney Cox asks David Arquette if he has the numbers stored in his memory. And he looks up in the sky and she goes, your phone memory, you idiot.
Oh, my God.
Such a dumb joke. But
Jake,
it made me
calls
laugh.
Me David Arquette so much.
Well, the mustache.
Just like David Arquette in this movie.
Yeah, and are you not going to be? You should be Deputy Dewey for Halloween. You've been growing the mustache all year for it.
Dude, you could have just told me that's what you were going to do, and I would have mailed you my Woodsboro outfit. I used it 3 years ago.
Listen.
That's awesome.
I'm torn, and this is why, like, I don't really – it's weird because everyone asks me, like, you love horror movies. You love Halloween. How do you not have a costume? It's like, I love Halloween, but I don't like social gatherings, so I have no need for a costume.
But you get to be somebody else.
Yeah, I pretend to be someone else every week. Do you know how happy I portray myself on this podcast?
Yes, you do.
The only thing I don't like about the Scream, post-Scream, actually, aside from Scream 1 and Scream 4, is you can't call Scream 2 and Scream 3 a mystery, because a mystery implies that there's some way that you could figure it out on your own. And it's like it's like a game of roulette. It's like, it's just this guy, and don't ask questions. It makes sense. He's the killer.
I know. Well, I was going to say, it's actually really crazy to me, because with 2 and 3, like, I feel like I'm really dating myself. I'm not that much older. Like, in 2000, I was 18 years old. But, I mean, you know, like, the internet, like, at the end of the 90s was, like, the thing. You're like, guys, we can go search for anything. And I remember...
I can check out this sweet Angel Fire site that tells me everything about Scream 3 before it comes out.
I can't believe you even said it. I was going to say Angel Fire is where I lived.
Dude, I made so many GeoCities websites, it's not Geo even funny.
Cities. Oh my
and
God.
I had my live journal back then.
Oh my gosh. But I just remember like being like consumed with like trying to figure out who the killer was going to be in Scream 2. Like, I wanted to find out before I saw the movie. Like, I felt like I could, I guess. And then with 3, I remember, and even reading like on some of the behind the scenes, just how like Wes Craven had to shoot like 4 different endings and not tell everybody which was the real ending. And like, they wouldn't let, it was like kind of like the first time that they started printing like the ending on red pages, so that the script couldn't be like scanned by anybody to like spoil the ending. Like all these precautions they had to go through to like try and protect who the killer was in Scream 3, because it got spoiled for Scream 2. And so the Billy's mom in Scream 2 got spoiled, like it leaked online. And so they added the lame Timothy Oliphant thing to just have some kind of surprise, which was just the dumbest thing ever.
Well,
but
I'm like, I just remember, I feel like when I was a kid, it was always like, oh, in this one, it's going to be Sydney. Like, she went crazy. Like, that was always the internet rumor that I would hear.
Yeah.
And it just never makes sense to me, like, ever.
Never. Yeah, never. You're just like, wait, what? Or, like, I remember both 2 and 3, like, it came up like, this is where we're going to find out. It was her dad.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, that's weird. But
well,
that dude,
and,
oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, I remember the one rumor that came out for Scream 3 that I really bought into and stoked on and wasn't totally disappointed when I saw this movie, even though I was just younger and probably just dumber. But everyone was talking about how, like, oh, the killer in part 3 is going to tie back to part 1. And I just remember thinking, like, oh, that's going to be rad. And, like, the whole idea, like, it's going to turn out to be someone that actually orchestrated, like, Billy and Stu from the first movie. And I was just like, oh, man, this movie's going to be brilliant. And
It's not at all.
It was
well,
not.
And, like, that's the thing. The timeline doesn't even make sense. Like he's – because, okay, Brett, you've made movies. So, like, you can back this up a little bit. You've got Roman up there, and he's like, 4 years ago, I found my mother.
Mm-hmm.
That just in my head does not make mathematically sense that in 4 years, he met the mom, got pissed off, videotaped her having sex with Billy's dad, got the videotape to Billy. Billy kills everybody, and they're making the third sequel to the film based on what happened back then. Like, that feels like a 7-year timeline, and somehow...
Yeah.
Based on his storyline, it all happened in 4 years.
You know, Roman's a go-getter, Matt. Some of us like to take the easy road, and slow and steady wins the race. Not always. Not always. Sometimes you got to be a go-getter. The only thing that this movie should have had, which all the other ones did, was it should have had a second killer, because then it would explain the things that are inexplainable.
I never really, like, pieced that timeline together, though, in my head, and that, like, that's really ridiculous. Like,
hey, Brett, like, welcome, like, to being in Matt's head. He wastes time on lots of brain power and time on shit that doesn't matter.
We all need someone that does that for us, and I'm really grateful for it.
Oh, me too. Me too. I get to be a normal human.
So,
but what's crazy, though, is, like, let's set aside the fact that, like, there's no way that Hollywood did 3 movies in 3 years unless it's a Saw franchise. But then the other thing is, like... I mean, what kind of creeper son are you that you're like, oh, mom, I finally found you. Don't worry. I'm going to be outside stalking you and videoing you through the window with your weird boyfriends. Totally love you, mom. Like, what is going on?
So I will say that there's a few things that I will give positive comments to with Scream 3. There.
Okay, good. I have some, too. I mean, there is some stuff I like, but yeah, go ahead.
I think the scene where Sydney goes into the set of her room might be the best part in this movie. I think it's a genuinely well done scene, and I don't know if this was done intentionally or accidentally, but the set dresser, when she walks into the room where there used to be an Indigo Girls poster in the first movie, is a Creed poster.
Yeah.
And
you know exactly who orchestrated that. Scott Stapp, who also did the soundtrack.
But you know what I mean? Like, as much, like, it could just be a happy accident, but I think that little piece of information actually backs up everything else that this movie is about, where it's about how Hollywood keeps down women empowerment. So you have, you know, the Indigo Girls that represent musically women's empowerment, and then you replace it with the most bro rock thing humanly possible. And I was like, you know, it could just be a happy accident, but I love that, like, little detail, because I think it does back up what the movie's trying to be about. And then I think the chase scene through the sets is really fun. Like, yes. I really like that chase.
That was actually going to be the one thing I wanted. You really just took the words out of my mouth, and that's hilarious to me. Because that whole set piece, that whole thing agreed. Like, when I was watching, I was like, this is really something special. Like, this is the type of thing that only this movie could do, right? Like, having Sydney walking through a recreation of her home and the chase through the sets and everything. I remember going, this is really rad. Like, even rewatching it, I was just like, man, this this just goes to show that they were sitting on something cool. They just didn't know what to do with it, and they didn't do anything cool with it. Because even the showdown when they're in, like, it's not Roman's house in the end. It's supposed to be Lance Henriksen.
Lance Henriksen's, yeah.
John Milton's house or whatever the guy's name was. I mean, there's even a few, like, cool set pieces in there. Like, they made that cellar seem really creepy, even though it was, like, way drawn out. But, like, I felt like that house felt creepier than any house I had seen Scream go to. And yeah. I just remember feeling like, this is cool. It's just a shame it's all in this movie.
Yeah. Up until the reveal of the killer, I think the third act really works better than the first two acts.
Yeah, like, totally. And what did you guys think of Patrick Dempsey rewatching?
That was so weird that he was in this.
I mean, I felt like the whole time, because I remember really liking him in this movie, actually, because I just wasn't totally familiar with him. We're now in the context of having watched all Grey's Anatomy. I'm a good husband. I try to participate when my wife watches it.
Yeah. That's what you do.
It's just weird. But what's funny is, like, I was watching it this time going, like, I feel like Wes Craven's direction to him was like, hey, like, every single line, it's like the subtext is you're trying to tell her with your eyes, I'm the killer.
Yeah. Because I'm worst red herring.
Like, yeah, he's like lingering looks on her, and then he keeps like getting really close to her face and whispering, like, hey, so listen. It's kind of like, geez, who is this guy?
He's got a thing for her.
Here's the issue. You said it yourself. They made four different endings that they shot, which means that they had to justify all four of those endings being a possibility to people.
Can you
so
imagine?
I'm sure one of those endings, it's him.
Can you imagine? He's like, he goes home and he's like, hey, honey, so got some really rad news. Turns out you can't tell anybody. You know, the internet's ablaze. Angel Fire's blowing up. But, you know, I'm pretty flattered. They're making me the killer. And then you go to the premiere and you're like, wait a second. What?
What? And him, like, honestly, he makes more sense as the killer than Roman does scheme of things.
Yeah.
No, Roman is just so, like, oh, it's just so disappointing. None of the movies really ever hit the satisfaction of the reveal of the first movie. Like, when
you can't.
You can't. You really can't. Like, the bar is too high. And the truth is like, if the second movie was just Billy's mom, I actually probably would have liked that better than what they ended up having to do. Because I remember thinking that idea felt cool. Just it felt very meta, just the idea of kind of like paralleling like the Pamela Voorhees type thing, where I was just like, okay, this is interesting. Or, you know, Norman Bates, and just the whole idea of like tying the imagery of a mother to the killer was just felt really iconic and homage-y to me. So I just remember thinking that was cool, but I was so distracted by how uncool everything else was.
Yeah. And Scream 2, man, it is a rough watch as an adult. For me, because even if you did fix the big twist and reveal at the end, it doesn't retract that hour beforehand. That is just not good.
No.
You guys are being way too mean to this movie.
Well, we're actually talking about Scream 2 right now.
Both this franchise. You're going to get too well, mean to this franchise.
Listen, you can't do a 10 out of 10 and then expect people not to expect. You can't, like, Wes Craven can't expect people to be like, I guess I can give this 7 out of 10 a pass because the previous one was so goddamn good.
I think the biggest thing is that I would argue that the third act of Scream is one of the best third acts in any horror movie, and that made the bar for all of the other films' third acts, and none of them ever achieved it.
Very true.
Well, you know what I think is, here's my theory, like, having revisited all three of these, where I'm like, when you watch the first Scream, what's amazing to me for how long this movie has existed is how this movie still has a charm to it, in the sense of, this feels like a small town full of just small town people that just are aware of movies and love movies, and this horrible thing's happening, right? So, like, all the self-awareness feels cute, whereas it becomes the most famous movie of all time. And my theory is, I just feel like all sequels suffer from sequelitis, where they kind of, it's almost like, oh wait, we are cool, oh wow. Cool. So when I come to school next year, I can act like a cool guy now. And so, like I feel like when you watch the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, like, they didn't know what they had with Jack Sparrow in the first movie. And then the second movie, it's all about, like, hey, guys, here he is again. Yeah. Yeah. And so the Scream movies already, like, just making a sequel, you run the risk of looking like a jerk for just knowing who you are now and just going, hey, remember when we were the number one movie last year and you loved us? Yeah. We're back, you know. But then, like, add on to that the fact that the movie is also self-aware makes it feel like, yeah, it makes it feel really self-important, and it doesn't feel cute anymore. And that was kind of my knee-jerk reaction to watching 2 and 3, where I'm like, there's a lot that I can appreciate, but the self-awareness now, it isn't charming. It feels like self-important and kind of almost arrogant in a way, just like, oh yeah, oh man, movies like this do that, we know that because we're the Scream movies.
I feel like Wes Craven, and this is what I've been telling myself for years, which is probably why I justify the entire franchise. Wes Craven takes it so seriously with his Scream movies that he's like, okay, this is the third ones are ridiculous, third ones don't make sense, third ones are stupid, so I'm going to make a ridiculous, stupid, not making sense movie to make the ultimate parody. And I stand by that.
I think the biggest issue with this movie is that it's the only one out of the four that Kevin Williamson didn't write the screenplay for, and it shows, like, because it doesn't have the, like, it doesn't have the snappy dialogue, it doesn't have the, like,
the trying pacing.
To think how to wear this. It doesn't have the pacing. Yeah. Even like with Scream 2, I love Scream 2, but like with Scream 2, there's still a little, like, it's referential without slapping you in the face with how meta it's being.
I would not say it does slap you in the face, man.
But compared to like this in part,
oh yeah,
like this, it's just like all up in your business about it. Scream 2 at least is still a little, it's not much more meta than the first one in that way, but this one is just like, well, we're making Stab 3 and they're following the script to Stab 3.
Changing the script.
Yeah.
All right, so I have two things that I want to say. Well, one big thing about Maureen and Sydney, and then since we've been spending so much time talking about meta horror, I really want to talk about You Might Be the Killer. So we'll get there.
That's fine. Yeah, let's wrap this up and get into that, because I can't imagine we can say that much more about Scream.
No, but here's my biggest problem with this movie. And I know that we're a comedy podcast, but I got to take it back a notch, take it down a notch here for a sec. I really don't like – here's the thing that – I mean, like, I can forgive the pacing, the goofiness, the runtime, the just – I can forgive most of this shit because we watch a lot of garbage, right? But the thing that really is the absolute nail in the coffin for me of Scream 3 is that, one, they have this concept, which is a really misogynistic concept, that Maureen Prescott was ruined by being used by a bunch of Hollywood execs when she was in her 20s. And I understand that sexual assault and it is life-changing and terrible, but it really – the concept that made her a slut – like, that's literally what Roman said, is fucked up, and I hate it. And it's like that a woman is tarnished, like that only if you're in a monogamous relationship for your entire life are you can you be a good woman? And since she was taught that sex is just a thing, that she couldn't be, you know, like, faithful to her husband. I mean, it's just fucking. It really rubs me the wrong way. So really sucks, and I hate that. Second of all, they completely take away Sydney's power at the very end of this, because she doesn't kill Roman. Dewey does. So she is a total badass at the very end of this. She, like, stabs the fuck out of him. And then, of course, as is typical in Scream fashion, he gets back up and he's like, ah, stupid. And then, so Dewey's shooting him in the bulletproof vest, and she goes, Dewey, in the head. And then he, you know, like, how is a bulletproof vest going to save you from getting stabbed, first of all? And second of all, if you're going to have Sydney, if this is going to be the ultimate end to the series, give Sydney that power. Give her the ability to finally kill the end of the lineage. Not give it to a man. I don't know. That just bugs the shit out of me. I support all
that. No, I get that. I totally get that. I also feel like if I were to wrap up my thoughts on Scream 3, is it's a, I mean, I don't really know if anyone can wrap it up better than that. I think that's so poignant. Well, like thank you, really man. Right on. I really do. Like, and I agree with all that. And it is like, it's just funny how it is a product of its time and not in a good way. Like yeah. all of those things show. And like you guys said already, like even the fact that it's like produced by the Weinsteins, it's just like, it casts such a like sickly glow over the movie that you're like, oof. But I also just in general, like for anyone trying to make movies, it's so hard to make a movie about Hollywood, and I hate it whenever people do it. Like, it's just to me, like, it's such an inside joke.
It is, yeah. That, like, it's not for the audience. It's for the
it's the, not the for maker. The audience. And that's what kills me is like Scream 1 is the epitome of a for the audience movie. And I feel like Scream 2 benefits from that in the sense like, well, we all go to college or, you know, we all are like going into like education. Like it's not a leap to follow that. Like that's yeah. a world that's relatable. But then like once they left the Hollywood, I just every time I just kind of roll my eyes at these things. It just feels like, so that one city in the country where they do this, this movie's for you guys. I think
I had just like, and only the people that are actually in the industry.
Yeah, there's just a ton of inside jokes that I'm just like, I feel like in middle America where they're watching it, like half of them are just going like, what are they talking about having to sleep with people for roles? Is that a thing? You know, like it just feels
and
like
it's not educational.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like educating us plebs over in, you know, flyover states.
It starts to feel like it falls way more in the direction of like feeling self-important. You yeah. know, just like, oh yeah, look how cool this is and how cool what we do is. And it's just always, I don't know, I always have this really weird knee-jerk reaction to like, I'm going to write this movie or this scene about a guy on the phone with his agent, but let me pause from writing the scene because I have to hop on the phone with my with actual my agent. Yeah. You know, like, I just don't like it. It just bothers me so much. So it's kind of fighting a losing battle for me from the offset just by being that. But then you're absolutely right. Like on top of that, the messaging of the movie is like even worse. It's just like, oh God. So just skip and go straight to 4, I guess.
Yeah, 4 is fun as hell.
4 is great. Yeah,
4 is I only have incredible. 4 is incredible until one scene. And I know we're not on here to talk about it, but I have to get this off my chest because I think 4 was the most brilliant horror movie I had ever seen until they screwed it up. It was when Emma Roberts is getting wheeled off in the gurney mm-hmm. and you know, they're like trying to interview her and like, oh my God. And they're portraying her as the victim. I like almost got on my feet in the theater. I was like, if they cut the credits, so help me God, I'm going to slow clap for the next 30 minutes. I'm just going to stand there and I'm going to slow clap because just, I was like, this is going to be like the ballsiest, raddest, most meta, like this is going to be the craziest ending to anything I've ever seen. And it's going to be like the ultimate tip of the hat to Scream. And then as soon as she is in the hospital in Sydney and Gail Weathers came in,
when,
and I was
when
like,
it turns into Dr. Giggles for 10 minutes.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. And then like, and then they end up subduing her, and then it's all just a happy ending all over again. And I was just kind of like, oh,
I mean, you had a good thing and you fucked it up.
I know. And I forgive it for that reason, but when I watch that movie, I actually stop it. Really? Like when she's on the gurney, I just turn it off because that's my ending. I'm just like, oh,
that's actually we're gonna call that the director's cut, but we're not going to say which director.
Yeah. And it's not really a cut more than a stop; it's the director's stop.
you cut a portion of the movie out. Let's call it a cut.
But here's the thing. So I listened to Kevin Williamson, and he did an interview like months after Scream 4, where he said that was the ending of the movie. And everything after that in the hospital with Sydney and Gail showing up, it just felt like it was tacked on by the studio. And he confirmed that that's exactly what it was. Like he was like, the intention of the movie always was for Emma Roberts to get away with it. And then if they made a Scream 5, Scream 5 is going to be all about her trying to continue getting away with it in the midst of a copycat killer. So the whole idea of like someone else is trying to copy what she did, but them getting caught could threaten her getting caught. So now she has to try and figure out who it is and stop them in order to not get caught herself. And I was like, dude, this is unbelievable. And the studio just came in and screwed the whole thing up and just like ugh, but at the same time, it's brilliant. Sorry. And there you go. Scream 4.
I'm done. Right, it's so, like the curse. Maybe the producer's cut is better than Scream 3. Maybe the ones are like, we need more of the actresses having sex with the rich men. More of that.
So talking about meta horror and you know all of that stuff, there couldn't have been a better movie for us to have you on. So let's talk a little bit about You Might Be the Killer.
But let's each
quick. Let me just waste 3 seconds of everyone's time. Cotton Weary is played by Liv Schreiber, who's in Spotlight with Michael Keaton, who is Beetlejuice.
So my preamble about You Might Be the Killer is much what I'm sure that Matt has already told Brett, is that it's super cool. It is so good. I was like texting or messaging Matt as I was watching it and just like filleting it. And I just like, if you guys listening, if you like meta horror, you gotta find a way to watch You Might Be the Killer however you can, because you know that Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon used to be my favorite modern meta horror. It is now pushed down a peg. You Might Be the Killer is above it. There you go.
That's awesome. You're too generous. That's awesome.
But yeah, it's just it's a smart screenplay. Every person I even tell the general premise to of, you know, basically, yeah, this guy finds a bunch of dead camp counselors and then can't remember if he killed them or not. People are like, oh my God, I want to watch that like right now.
That's, like, awesome. That's a way better pitch than I have. That's so much better.
But like it's such an interesting twist. And Scott said this when he was talking to me about it, but he goes, I love this because it's super meta without really shoving anything in my face about it being meta.
That's how you have to do it.
Naturally there.
Yeah. It's like, it's not wink, wink, nudge, nudging you, because that's what is wrong with meta horror for me, is that the worst way you can do it is be like, hey guys, we're in on the joke, or hey guys, remember that other movie? We're going to talk about it here. Whereas I feel like all the references in You Might Be the Killer are, they don't detract from the actual story.
That's awesome. Dude.
Even the Halloween 2018, the references are and Easter eggs are everywhere. And I think that is great, but also somewhat a detriment. Whereas it's a really thin line that you have to just walk between being too much and not enough. And it's very, I mean, it's a huge credit to everyone involved with You Might Be the Killer, because bigger movies were not able to do it this year.
Dang. Well, thank you. I mean, to be honest, like it was something that I was sweating quite a bit, because I feel all the same ways. You know, I was like, dude, as soon as it feels like we're winking at the audience or like just kind of like being like kind of shticky about it, like it's just going to be lame and we're going to lose everybody. And like the only thing I knew to do with the story to make it work was hinge it on these two friends, Sam and Chuck, because I like, we all love watching horror movies and we all love talking to them about our friends. And if we were in this situation, we all know which friend we would call, and we could probably all imagine how that conversation would probably go. Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, and if any of the winking isn't at the audience, but it's at each other, or like any of the jokes are more aimed at teasing each other, or just more just stemming from their relationship and their chemistry with each other, I was like, then it will probably work better. But it was all a theory at the time. I didn't know. And I was just like freaking out. Just, I was like, oh, dude, like, I just don't want this to be some cheesy like joke of a movie. So I was really glad to find out that it's been working for people, because that was important to me as well.
Well, and I said this to you at Fantastic Fest, but I want to say it on this, just because in the grand scheme of things, people are always going to listen to the main episodes more than the bonus episodes. And I want it to be known that the visual style that you went with this movie, of everything that takes place at the camp having this grainy film look, but everything that takes place on the other side of the phone call being a modern, pristine camera shot, is so fucking cool. And I think it really helps differentiate what's happening in the movie for people.
Thanks, man. I was so impressed when you like noticed that. Since you and I sat, you know, I've been going through the festival circuit touring around with the movie a little bit. And that's only come up one other time. Like, and even then, like, it was someone more just kind of guessing, and no one, like, no one really saw it the way that you saw it. And I'm like, dang, that Matt, man, he noticed. Like, that's crazy. It's awesome. And it is 100% true. Like, I just felt like the, as long as the camp feels like the gritty campground slasher that we love pulling off our VHS shelf, you know, but then the comic store looks more like, you know, kind of like a John Hughes, like 80s, like rom-com. Like, I feel like we're helping the audience a little bit. But I still can't believe you noticed that. That was so amazing to me.
That's the only reason I brought it up. I wanted to compliment again.
Yeah. Hooray for me.
But so where are people going to be able to see the movie? Is there any news of a DVD release? I know it's on Sci-Fi every once in a while. Right now.
So it's airing again on, I mean, not that it matters on this podcast. It's airing on October 29th. Again, and then it is on the Sci-Fi, it's on Sci-Fi's on demand and on their app, but I guess that's regional, so that sounds really spotty and lame. It is going to be streaming. I don't know when that announcement is being made, because there's a chance it might not be announced by the time this podcast is live, so I don't know what the dates are, but I still hesitate kind of going into too much detail. But I will say that it will be easily accessible on a streaming service that you probably already have.
That makes me very happy.
And, yeah, I hope so, because I haven't been able to find it, and it's been very upsetting. I have it now that I could watch on my computer, but when I heard it was on the Sci-Fi app, I was like, nice, I have Hulu, and they shouldn't even call it the Sci-Fi app. Just call it Battlestar Galactica, because that's all that's available. That's hilarious. Battlestar
Galactica. Hey, do you guys got the Battlestar Galactica app?
Get this slasher shit off my Battlestar Galactica app.
Yeah, it's like, guys, there's this really weird movie on my Battlestar Galactica app. Like, I was in the middle of season 3, and then all of a sudden I was in this camp. And what was it? It'll be on a stream, and then it'll be getting a Blu-ray VOD, like iTunes release. That's all in conjunction with the streaming release. And again, okay, like, I don't know exactly when that's happening. I just know that it all is happening and is all in motion and is all going to be sooner rather than later.
Nice. So, I'm just excited to put it on my DVD shelf. That's like my biggest goal now. So
I appreciate that. You know, it's been funny kind of looking at poster art, because I don't know if you guys have seen the poster art that exists. But I made it for Fantastic Fest because we needed a poster. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to make a poster. And now, like, we've been getting all this, like, kind of potential cover art for the DVD release. And I'm like, guys, like, I look like a real arrogant jerk, but please just use my poster. I really don't like the stuff that's coming out. Anyways, I've already gone on record as saying that, so I don't mind going on record again. Oh my God. Like,
the one that looks like the 80s style.
Yeah. It looks like it's drawn. It's
why, like, would anybody argue with you about using that?
Because I feel like the new thing with posters is like, okay, cool, we're gonna get all of their headshots standing in a line with a killer behind them, and that's it. Like,
right,
like, how Scream had like the same fucking poster every year. It was just like, here's the cast.
Like, not Scream 4.
That's true. Not Scream 4.
What was the poster for Scream 4? I'm trying to remember.
It was the knife into the ghost face.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
It was a dope poster, actually. I like the Scream 4 poster. All right. Well, go and check out You Might Be the Killer when and if it is available on a streaming service at this time. If it isn't, it will be soonish.
Soonish. I'm really glad that I could give you guys really detailed information. I really hope I was helpful.
Hey guys, didn't mean to interrupt this fantastic episode of us talking about Scream 3 with Brett Simmons from the director of You Might Be the Killer. But I just wanted to let you guys know that if you head over to the Patreon page, patreon.com/HMN podcast, you're going to find the newest Patreon episode for Arena, the Star Wars Rocky combo movie. Also, it's important to note that on there is also the Fear Street Pit Show that we put an episode on the feed maybe 2 months ago, where we try to come up with movie adaptations for Fear Street books based strictly on the cover, since none of us have read any of the books. And Coming soon to the feed in 2019, we'll be doing more Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark episodes. We've done a few of those for the feed, and we're going to make those Patreon exclusives. So if you haven't yet, go over to patreon.com/HMN podcast and join all of the bonus feature fun. And now back to the episode.
What was your guys' double features for Scream 3? And Brett, we'll save you for less so that we can kind of give you a rough idea. I'll okay, start.
Cool. No, I was going to steal yours. Just
go for it then, Brian. Go for it. What do you steal?
I don't know if it was actually going to be yours. But this takes place on a set of a movie. And Brett mentioned that anytime you do that, it's terrible. But he's actually wrong. There's one time that it is a complete bonkers masterpiece. But what Scream 3 should have done was made it a movie inside of a movie, a.k.a. Terra Firmer, and that's what we would watch.
That was not one of my picks, but that's a great one. I was going to go with something that I still think is one of the most painfully underappreciated slasher movies of all time.
Scream 3.
It's not quite on a movie set, but it's a slasher film that takes place inside of a movie theater, and it's 1991's Popcorn.
I knew that was going to be your pick.
I love Popcorn so much.
So I'm going to go a little bit different, and we have talked about this previously where I'm going to be like, okay, I've seen Scream 3, but I haven't seen the double feature, so we're going to take a chance on something. Anguish? You know, the one with Zelda Rubinstein, and it's
okay.
That's Anguish, right?
I think so. Brett, I've never seen it.
You know what I'm talking
I've
about?
I've never seen Anguish. No,
it's this guy. It's this theater watching horror movie, and then there's people getting killed in the theater, and it's kind of like Nightmare of a Damaged Brain, where the guy's like not all there. But yeah, I thought it was called Anguish, but let me look up Zelda Rubinstein. Well,
that's what I'm doing.
Did it come out in 1987?
Yes. Is that Anguish?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't wrong, but wonderful. Yeah, it's on my very, very long list for horror movie night.
That's uses awesome. Telepathic powers to send her middle-aged son on a killing spree is the tagline. So they really spoiled it right there in the tagline.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a surprise, but okay.
I actually was writing down Popcorn. I haven't seen Popcorn either. And I'm looking this up and I'm like, dude, this looks amazing.
Oh, Popcorn is so good.
It's stupid fun. It's so good.
The cast is awesome. I gotta watch this thing. Dang. This is awesome. Hey, I feel like Scream 3, like just being like a really bad meta sequel that takes place on a film set, should be paired with another really bad meta sequel that takes place on a film set. So I was gonna say that you should watch this with Urban Legends Final Cut.
Oh, nice.
And then afterwards you can decide which was the stinker. You know, it's like when you put two turds next to each other, you know, it's like, which one is the worst one?
I haven't seen Urban Legends Final Cut, but as movies tend to go, they get worse as they go on. And I've seen Urban Legends, and I can only imagine how.
Yeah, same. All right.
Have you guys seen Urban Legends Bloody Mary?
No, I've only seen Urban Legend, which is like, you want to talk about this movie and like, oh, that doesn't make sense how Rowan did all that, how a 110-pound girl did everything that she did in Urban Legends absolutely blows my mind. Well,
it also is the most ridiculous thing, because it feels like, even like I was like younger and I still was going, wow, this feels like producers really reacting to Scream. Because like,
yeah.
I'm gonna base all my motivation off of movies, and then they go, hey, do you know what else someone could base their motivation off of? Something way more complicated, Urban Legends. It's like the dumbest thing. I can't believe that movie exists. But the reason I say it is because it's horrible. Final Cut is also horrible. Bloody Mary was written by Mike Dougherty.
And, oh, shit.
And what?
You have no idea how good that movie is. Like, you're going to, you are going to.
I mean,
to
I kind of do, because Mike Dougherty just hits home runs in my eyes.
Hey, guys, I think he's, I got so an good idea. We do Bloody Mary for horror movie night, but we don't watch it beforehand. Don't, like, I mean, like, we watch it like day of and then record, because I feel like if it's something that none of us have seen and it's getting a glowing review, it could be a fucking fun time.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Look, he made one of my favorites. He did Let Me Down with Krampus, but doesn't matter. He's still my trick or treat, so I forget. Should have been R.
There's a lot to like about Krampus. It did let me down a little bit too, but it also like exceeded my expectations. It was like such a mixed bag for me. No pun intended. I really like Mike.
Find more of that great humor and you might be the killer.
More jokes in my movie. That's awesome.
All right. Well, that was Scream 3 as picked by Brian. So thanks a ton. We're not getting off the movie sets just yet. Next week, we'll be talking about another slasher film that takes place at a movie set. So stay tuned to see what that is. In the meantime, check out our website, hmnpodcast.com, or, you know, send us some emails at hmnpodcast@gmail.com, or just hang out on our Facebook page. It's a fucking dope place and people post crazy shit in there all the time. And I kind of love it. So thank you once again for listening. Thank you again, Brett, for joining us. Check out his movie, You Might Be the Killer. It's possibly on a streaming device at this moment. and we'll be back next week.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.